This podcast contains explicit material. Listener discretion is advised. Hi, and welcome to The Joy of Text, a podcast about Judaism and sexuality. At the request of many listeners, we have decided to really bring home the text in The Joy of Text, and Rabbi Linzer is now going to share with us an in-depth text study.
So the text I want to look at today is one that's often quoted when people think about interesting rabbinic stories about sex. It's from the Gemara in Chagiga, and it says the following, and I'll just read it in translation. Says Rav, even extra talk between husband and wife, they will report to a person when he dies, when he goes up to heaven. Is this really true? Behold, Rav Kahana was sleeping under or lying under the bed of Rav, and he heard that Rav spoke sexually with his wife, and he made sport, sachak ve'asat zrachav, and he took care of his needs. That's a literal translation. So anyway, Rav was quite explicit in his sexual banter with his wife. So Rav Kahana said, it seems like the mouth of Rav is as if somebody who has never tasted food before in his life. So it was a way too blatant or sexual, the conversation, for his ears. And Rav realized that he was under the bed. So Rav said to him, Kahana, get out! This is not appropriate. Lav orach ara. This is not the way of that people should act, being under the bed of their rabbi. So anyway, all of this is brought in a conversation of, you see, a man is allowed to talk sexually to his wife, so what does it mean when he gets up to heaven, they're going to hold him accountable for his sexual talk? So the Gemara says, this is not difficult. One is a case where it's necessary to seduce the wife to get her into the mood, and the other is when it is not necessary. So apparently excessive sexual talk when it's not necessary, you're going to be held accountable for. So I just think that this passage is so fascinating because it brings to light, you know, so many different types of conflicting messages in the Talmud, because people quote an excerpt, right? Isn't this beautiful, right? That there he was under the bed just to learn about how his Rebbe was acting. And in another parallel passage in the Gemara, it actually says that his response to his Rebbe was, Torahi ululamdani tsarech. No, this is Torah, and I need to learn. I need to understand how a person, you know, how a man should be with his wife. So it's actually the use of Torah in a conversation about sexual education and what it means to give the label of Torah to learning how to be sexual, a couple with one another, is a very powerful. But on the other hand, you'll notice that when I now paraphrase it, I said with one another. So there are some problems with this text also, or some other types of messages it raises. It's very much male oriented. It describes how he's getting his wife in the mood. It's not really talking about her side of it. When it even talks about the act of sex, it uses the phrase v'asat tzrachav. He took care of his needs. He did his business. The sexual banter is allowed to get her in the mood, to make her like a willing partner. So there's a very positive thing about that type of verbal foreplay and having the wife sexually excited, but there's also the very sort of male orientation to this. And the last point I'll make, and then I'd love to hear your thoughts, is what does that mean to say, well, you're going to be held accountable for any extra talk that's not absolutely necessary, or that's one way of reading it, in order to get your wife in the mood, right? I mean, does that put a whole big downer on this type of freedom that the couple should be having in terms of the way they are with one another?
So I'll just respond by saying the male orientation, you might as well just give up on that, because like every quote you're going to get, like every passage you're going to get is going to have a male orientation. So can we just bracket that? I feel like I think what's fascinating to me is that obviously his life likes it when he talks to her. Like when we talk about using street language, or people say talk dirty, but I don't like that term, but like talking sort of more street language or more sexually to somebody, clearly his wife likes it. So let's put that in. I think that's really important. And also maybe not saying extra things, saying things that your spouse doesn't like, doesn't enjoy, doesn't want, that maybe, I know I'm sort of reading into the text, so I don't really think this is the basic of what the text meant, but maybe there's something about that, being sensitive to what kind of banter is enjoyable to both of you and what isn't.
Oh, that's a really nice read.
I also like the language of sachak in there, because I think it kind of reframes what sex could be, even in this like from sex situation, where yes, he's saying things to get her in the mood so she's okay with it, but the nature of the relationship, it says sachak, there's a lightness to it and a fun to it. Mm-hmm. And to me, I mean, obviously the male lens is like something we'll never be able to avoid, but I think the word sachak here is kind of critical in making light of what the, you know, what this is. It's not just this serious thing, and there's a talk that's that maybe that kind of appropriates the talk. Like, this is a case in which it's okay. Maybe language like this outside of that context isn't okay, but because it's because of this whole interaction, whether it's sachak, I mean, maybe it wasn't funny, it was serious, but it's just for this interaction, to me, that kind of reframes this whole
That is a great point. One of the words, of course, people talk about in terms of how the Torah speaks about sex is yada, to know, and what that implies. But a word we often forget is it does use the word tzachak. V'ne Yitzchak mitzachek et Rivka ishto. Right? Obviously a play on the word Yitzchak, but it talks about him having sex with his wife and talks about his mitzachek. And I think, Rami, the point you make is excellent. Like, we often forget the fact that sex is supposed to be fun, you know, and the playfulness that can be part of that. And yeah, that is like really a great point. And I love your point, Bacheva, also about, like, you know, the what's bad about it is when it's not desired and when it's not something that is appropriate, you know, but appropriate defined by the relationship between the husband and wife. Do either of you are bothered by the phrase that sometimes when the Gemara talks about sex, it says like tashmish hamita or lishamesh, which, you know, also means like use of the bed. But somehow the phrase asatz rachav, to me, I don't know, to me that was like, it was hard because it was, he took care of his needs. There it was about getting her in the mood and like tzachak, and as you said, right, which has a sense of them enjoying it together. But somehow asat tzrachav, the personal possessive, you know, he did what his needs were. I don't know. That was a little bothersome.
I guess I have long ago given up on feeling like that it's going to sound politically correct. Do you know what I'm saying? I just don't even go there anymore when I'm looking at Gemara's, because like it just, I would just be frustrated all the time. So I bracket that. But I guess he did his need. Like, I don't know. I feel like sex is something that's important in life. It's what we all need. It's something we all need. Yes, it's what she needed too, maybe. Right. But right now, it's what he needed. So it doesn't really bother me.
It doesn't really bother me either, mostly because of, like, the bracketed thing. But also, I mean, it was written for men, by men, so I don't really see how they think outside of it. But even beyond that, I think that in a lot of Talmudic texts on sex, what always kind of surprises me is that, like, this was written in a time where consensuality probably wasn't a given. So while we could look at this and say, you know, he's fulfilling his needs, the fact that her needs are even discussed remotely is kind of incredible. And I happen to think very empowering that we're from a tradition that includes this in a text that didn't really talk about, you know, we didn't start talking about consensuality in like our culture till fairly recently, especially within the context of a marriage. Consensuality and sex in a marriage is a very new discussion, but to see that that's kind of built into our text, to me, I don't know, I find that to be like beautiful and empowering, not so much as about just being about his needs.
Right, because what you're saying is he has his needs, but then they get put into a context of her and her needs as well.
Also, I meant really for the historical context. Like, yeah, obviously it talks about this, and we could look at it and say that that's kind of difficult, but if you reframe it as what they actually could be saying about sex and about women, this is actually a pretty
great. And I'll just say, the last thing I'll say that consistent with that is, it's like there's also a part about Rav allowing himself, not just what he's doing to get his wife in the mood, but allowing himself to fully express his, you know, appetite and desire. Because when he says, like, it seems like he's never had food before, you know, like he can't stop talking about how delicious this, you know, meat is or whatever. It's like, you know, it sounds like he actually was allowing himself with his wife to actually express a part of his personhood and humanity, and, you know, that maybe can't get expressed in other contexts. I think there's something very powerful about that.
You know, I think we live in a society sometimes where men sort of, you know, in our communities at least, they sort of pull back some of their little more aggressiveness, which often you need when you're having sex. And so I think that sometimes, like, you know, being a man, getting what you want, those kinds of things, we tend to tamp down. Mm. And sometimes they work quite well when you're having sex. So I think being able to sort of tap into that also, like, this is a beautiful passage. A lot of, you know, when it gets quoted, people, like, love this passage. So
I love the fact that the parts of it that I thought were problematic, you know, you really heard in such a different way.
Yeah.
And I love that.
I love that you found it problematic as a man, and as women, we were like, it's fine.
Because we're used
whatever.
To, like, I guess I feel like we're, yeah. You know, if you want to buy into this community, you got to sort of bracket certain things.
That's
and,
great.
You know, anyway.
Terrific.
Yeah, I think also, just in terms of what we have been discussing in the podcast, the fact that people will go seek out sexual education, even in a format that's not super appropriate, is an important one. And it maybe it, you know, gets slightly glossed over because of the other important things in this Gemara, but it's really an important part of the story that the student was so eager to learn about sex that he took probably the most inappropriate route for doing that. And that, you know, it's maybe better to have that conversation before you find a student under your bed to avoid the initial awkwardness of the discussion,
Rob could have shortcutted this all the way through by having classes, about here's what you do when you have sex.
I can't believe I forgot to mention that, before the internet, how young from guys used to learn about sex. They read the Kitzer Shulchan Aruch in the part after Maariv, where it talks about the laws of Hilchot Tzniut, is what it's paraphrased as, but the laws of sex between husband and wife. So it gets into a little graphic detail. So that's how kids used to learn about sex.
That's a little scary.
No pictures. Okay, great.
The Joy of Text is produced by Jewish Public Media, which is supported in part by a grant from Next and Natan. This episode was recorded by Mike Hurst and edited by David Svi Kalman. You can listen to the show on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, or with any podcast app. My name is Rami Smith. Thank you so much for listening.
Great. Okay. I thought that text part was terrific.
I love it.